Funding for this talk comes from TrialX, connecting patients to clinical trials.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Cure Panel Talk Show. Wishing everyone here a very, very happy new 2014. I'm Priya Menon, Scientific Media Editor at Cure Talk, Cure Panel. I'm joining you from India, and we're kicking off our talk show series in the new year with a discussion on breast cancer. We have an interesting lineup of shows for you this January. We will be talking about nutrition and supplements during cancer treatment and beyond with UCSF expert Dr. Donald Abrams on January 17th. Our yoga panel on Jan 23rd will be discussing yoga nidra for PTSD with founder director of iRest, Dr. Richard Miller. And our myeloma panel is featuring MMRF on 28th of Jan. Please visit curepanel.curecarefeed.net for registering for our upcoming events. Before we begin today's show, I would like to thank everyone who has joined us today. In spite of the extreme cold weather, hope all of you are safe and please do keep warm. Today we are talking about understanding inflammatory and triple negative breast cancer. Inflammatory breast cancer is a very rare and aggressive disease in which cancer cells block lymph vessels in the skin of the breast. Inflammatory breast cancer accounts for 1 to 5% of all breast cancers diagnosed in the United States. Inflammatory breast tumors are frequently hormone receptor negative. The other breast cancer that we are talking today is about triple negative breast cancer, which refers to breast cancer that does not express the genes for estrogen receptor, progesterone receptor, or HER2. Triple negative breast cancer accounts for about 15% of all cases in the U.S., which means that approximately 25,000 women are diagnosed with the disease every year. The expert on the show today is Dr. Jovita Olwari. Dr. Olwari has devoted her entire career to helping women deal with breast cancer diagnosis. As she appreciates the emotional issues that accompany the disease, Dr. Olwari is deeply committed to employing breast-saving strategies whenever appropriate. Dr. Olwari is a member of the American Medical Association, American College of Surgeons, American Society of Breast Cancer Surgeons, Society of Surgical Oncology, and Mall City Medical Forum. Dr. Olwari recently received the Salute of Excellence in Healthcare Award from the St. Louis American Foundation. Welcome to the show, Dr. Olwari. It's great to have you with us. My co-host for the show today is breast cancer advocate and survivor, Beverly McKee. Beverly, also known as a breast cancer warrior, is an author, blogger, and inspirational speaker. She combines her clinical skills and personal experience with breast cancer to deliver a message of hope, support, and inspiration to her worldwide following through social media and speaking engagements. She has been featured on websites, TV, and radio for her unique insight into emotional aspects of dealing with breast cancer. Beverly has dedicated her life to creating hope for those who have been touched by breast cancer. She is a licensed therapist by training. Beverly connects with her followers and audiences on an emotional level, keeping them engaged and inspired to live the best life regardless of the challenges they face. Welcome to the show, Beverly.
Thanks, Priya. I appreciate you having me today.
Dr. Olwari is here with us. Dr. Olwari, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Thank you so much for joining us, Dr. Olwari. We would do first is I would just ask you a few brief basic questions so that our audience gets an idea of what we are talking about before we proceed to the panel discussion, which will be conducted by Beverly.
Okay.
I hope that is So my first question, Doctor, is a very basic one. What is triple negative breast cancer and inflammatory breast cancer?
Okay, well, typically most breast cancers will make three hormones or receptors or have evidence of three hormones. One of them is estrogen, which is the natural female hormone that we all possess, our progesterone. And then the third is the human epidermal growth factor receptor, which is a HER2 receptor. When a breast cancer lacks all three of these receptors, the estrogen, progesterone, and the HER2, it is considered triple negative.
Okay. Is this is treatment for both these breast cancers very different from the others?
Well, the other breast cancer that do make estrogen and progesterone hormones, or even the HER2 hormone, there are other treatments that can target them. We can give you tamoxifen, we can give you aromasin, we can do Herceptin, but with the triple negative breast cancers, we don't have those particular targeted treatments. But it doesn't mean that there is no treatment for triple negative breast cancers. There are other drugs, and there's so much right now in research, and a lot of these drugs comprise of chemotherapy rather than specific targeted drugs that we have for the receptor-positive breast cancers.
Could you talk, for the benefit of our listeners, a little bit about the different subtypes and the particular subtype and whether the subtype affects treatment for TNBC?
I'm sorry, if you can repeat that question, I lost some of it.
About the subtypes of triple negative breast cancer and whether the particular subtype affects treatment.
Well, the subtypes have to do with whether the particular cancers have the HER2 receptors or not. Again, the particular treatments are different chemotherapy drugs, not too much different from the traditional chemotherapy drugs that we have, but traditionally HER2, the impact of it is that we can't treat it with the hormone medicines that we can treat the estrogen and progesterone receptor positive cancers with. I don't know if that answered your question. I'm having a little bit of a tough time understanding that particular question.
Yes, Doctor, we have received quite a few questions from our listeners, our participants, and one of them wants to know that we know the importance of breast self-exam and searching for lumps. What should we be aware of with inflammatory breast cancer?
What should we be aware of with what? I am so sorry. I must have a bad connection with you.
I wanted to know, how do we, like for a common person, how do we know, what should we be aware regarding inflammatory breast cancer?
Oh, inflammatory breast cancer. I got you. So the common person should be aware that that's a very aggressive type of breast cancer, and it's something that should be diagnosed by the naked eye, even without mammography and without biopsy, by any practitioner. Practicing medicine, but commonly it is missed. The importance of what every woman should be looking out for when they examine themselves is just any obvious changes to the skin of the breast, which is the most common way that inflammatory breast cancers do present. So the breast is very red, very inflamed looking, And the reason many physicians miss it is because they treat it like a breast infection or a breast abscess. But what I commonly say is if a doctor sees you for a breast infection or a breast abscess and it does not get better within a week or 2 weeks, there is something else going on, because we don't treat breast cancers with antibiotics like we would infection. So if the antibiotics don't make it go away, it needs to be biopsied, and you need to prove that it is a breast cancer so that it can be treated appropriately. But it's got a very distinct, very obvious appearance. A lot of people describe it as looking like an orange peel. So if you looked at the skin of an orange, but instead of orange, it's bright red. That is the appearance of inflammatory breast cancer. So that needs to be treated as soon as it is seen.
Thank you, Doctor. With that, I will now hand over to Beverly for our panel discussion. We on the panel, we have three breast cancer survivors and advocates with us. Terry Arnold. Terry is founder of the IBC Network Foundation. To encourage education and fund research. Terry was diagnosed with triple negative inflammatory breast cancer in her right breast in August 2007 and a left triple negative contralateral tumor soon after. She had 6 months of chemotherapy, a double mastectomy, and daily radiation treatment for 6 weeks. At the time of the diagnosis, she was shocked at how little information was available regarding IBC and at the lack of research and education for this orphan form of breast cancer. The IBC Network Foundation was formed to educate people about IBC. We also have with us Eileen Z. Fuente. Eileen is a married mother of three girls and has been a healthcare administration professional for more than 15 years. In 2008, at just 34 years old, she was diagnosed with stage 2 triple negative breast cancer and underwent aggressive treatment, which led to many unpleasant complications, including a life-threatening blood clot in her heart. She is now a wellness educator, integrative cancer care coach, and started her own organization, The Speech, which stands for the Self-Promotion, Empowerment, Advocacy, and Care Haven, which is committed to support women dealing with health challenges, particularly those in undeserved and immigrant communities. Welcome to the show, Terry and Eileen. It's great to have you here. Our panelist, Heidi Floyd, is unable to make it today. She's been caught up in a snowstorm in Canada. I hope she's safe. Beverly, please, I'll now hand over to you to carry on with the panel discussion. You're on air.
Great. Thank you so much, Priya. Thank you, Dr. Oriari, for joining us. And my first question, you touched on just a bit, but my first question was, since we know that inflammatory breast cancer is not usually detected by a mammogram, and you just told us a little bit about it looks red, it is inflamed, and often is treated as a breast infection, I'm going to tweak my question just a little bit. And I'm curious, if someone has these symptoms and they go to see maybe their general doctor and that infection doesn't clear up and their breast doesn't start looking like a normal skin and the normal, all of that rash doesn't go away, should they visit a breast surgeon right away? Is that your recommendation?
Absolutely. That's my recommendation, because oftentimes a general practitioner or a gynecologist is not going to go the next step. They're not going to do a biopsy because that's not what they do.
Okay.
But, yeah, and, you know, this is not a diagnosis that is in the front of their minds.
That makes sense.
Right, and it's unfortunate, but I see it quite often, and it is usually coming from the gynecologist or the internist where someone has inflammatory breast cancer that's been treated for a while as a breast infection. And then we're playing catch-up because we've lost 2 to 4 weeks where nothing's been done other than antibiotics.
I think that's a great takeaway for all of the listeners, then. If for some reason your breast doesn't clear up after the treatment, then seek out a specialist. Eileen, are you with us?
Yes, yes, I'm here.
Welcome so much to the show. It's exciting to hear from you today. Do you want to go ahead and ask your first? Would you like to ask your first question?
Sure. So, as was mentioned in the introduction, I was diagnosed with breast cancer back in 2008, and what we know is that it's very aggressive. Are we any closer to finding targeted therapies for it?
We are, and you have the triple negative, I believe?
Yes.
So, yeah. So, we don't have a specific targeted therapy for triple negative breast cancer today, but we are getting close. I was at a meeting about 3 months ago, and a lot of the top researchers in the country were there, and, you know, they are definitely making headways. Unfortunately, there's nothing that's ready right now for prime time, but they are making headways. And I believe that so we're getting closer and closer to it.
Well, that's great news.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Eileen. Terry, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for joining us. Would you like to ask the doctor your first question?
Well, I had something I'd like to share that I think might be helpful. I think in the beginning there was a little delay, and some of the questions were didn't get to be explored as much as they wanted to be, I think. But, like, when you were asking earlier, you know, about what is triple negative, I'd like her to expand upon this. From what I understand, in the early 1980s, when it became apparent that hormone therapies were working with tumors that were estrogen receptor positive or progesterone receptor positive, the pathologists began to test tumors. And around that time then, when the late 80s, when the FDA approved the use of Herceptin for the use of metastatic breast cancer, that is when the wording triple negative really came into play, and we started realizing that there was this subset, a quote-unquote new type of breast cancer, that was then labeled triple negative because of that. And then so then they were able to make more specific therapies. And I would like to know, because I always get confused by this, and if you can address this, is you often hear the terms triple negative and basal-like used interchangeably, but that's not really appropriate. Can you explain that a little bit about basal-like tumors versus triple negative tumors?
Sure. There are different subtypes of the HER2, and it's really a combination or a mixture of things. So we have the luminals or the basals. The luminals, which then there's luminal A, luminal B, and it just kind of goes on and on. But the luminal Bs are more of the HER2 negative breast cancers. The luminal Bs, the HER2-positive breast cancers. And then you have the basal subtypes that are a combination of the HER2-positive and negative. And those are supposed to be more like the hormone receptor-positive breast cancers. And it gets really confusing. So there's a lot of research going into this, and this is where the targeted therapies, this is what is being explored in those targeted therapies. But I think the bottom line is that there's no black or white when it comes to HER2-negative, HER2-positive is what we're kind of starting to understand, that there are mixtures in between the positives and the negatives. And are we going to be able to use the same therapies that we use in the HER2-positive breast cancers for some triple-negative breast cancers? That's something we just don't know yet, although some of those groups are interchangeable.
Yes, and I think it's very important because I know for myself, prior to my breast cancer diagnosis, I had no idea there were so many different types, let alone subtypes. And I was diagnosed triple negative and inflammatory. My learning curve was very quick.
Right. And they're right. You know, it's something that's not talked about because I think really only the big institutions do the subdivision of the luminal A, luminal B. So a lot of our current pathology don't really have the ability to look at the little subdivisions or the major subdivisions that are within the triple negative breast cancers. So a lot of oncologists will not even talk about it because right now in 2014, we believe that the treatment does not really change. But it could change as we get more information. But right now, we don't have enough data to treat you differently if you're liminal A versus liminal B or basal.
Okay. Priya, if I might. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, Priya, I was going to say, since you also touched upon how to diagnose inflammatory, and the doctor used the term I really loved, the naked eye, because a lot of people think a mammogram will pick up all breast cancers, but a mammogram is not necessarily the most effective tool for inflammatory because of the skin presentation. And I'd like you to expand upon the signs and symptoms. You mentioned the orange peel, but there are more. And also, how does a mammogram matter, or should they be different with triple negative? Triple negative grows very quickly, so mammogram, we tend to have them once a year. So if someone has a lot of triple negative in their family history or whatever, there's a lot to discuss here too. So can you expand upon the signs and symptoms of inflammatory? You mentioned the peel to orange, but are there any others that you would like to share with the listeners who might be unaware?
Sure. One of the signs is just swelling of that breast compared to the opposite breast. It's a lot of edema, which is that the breast becomes really waterlogged. So it's, of course, the redness, the orange peel we talked about. There's a lot of warmth and heat, which is why it is so commonly mistaken for an infection. If you've ever had mastitis, if you were pregnant or breastfeeding, it doesn't look too different from that, which is why it's treated a lot of times like that. But you could also have some thickening of the skin. You could have some swelling of the lymph nodes under the arm or some lymph nodes above the neck. So this is just all some of the things that you may notice with the inflammatory breast cancer.
Excellent. I appreciate you saying those things. I appreciate you saying the naked eye, because we tend to think of technology, and inflammatory is something that's a very visual, clinical presentation, and also when something is happening only to one breast, that is a major hint. I know Priya has a whole panel, so I don't want to hog the time, but thank you.
Can I say something real quick about the mammogram? I don't want to undercut the importance of mammograms. They are really important, and they will diagnose about 85% of breast cancers. Unfortunately, they will not diagnose about 10 to 15% of them, and that would be the rapidly growing triple negatives and the inflammatories. And, you know, I don't want to say that those cancers are not important, because they are. Actually, they're very important because they're the most aggressive type of breast cancers, but mammograms are important for those 85% of breast cancers that they do find.
Oh, absolutely, and I'm glad you made that clear, because that was not my intent to make anyone think they weren't important, but I just think that it's, as someone who I thought was well-informed, I did not realize there were some things that kind of, as I put it, slipped through the cracks.
Absolutely.
And so that was just something it's good to know.
Okay. That's a good point.
Thanks so much, Terry. I think all of us who have been diagnosed with breast cancer probably would feel the same way when I say you absolutely don't know what you don't know about breast cancer until you're diagnosed. I was
Amen.
How informed I was. And I thought that I was really up on that because I did have some family history, but I really learned very quickly I didn't know much.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Dr. Oriari, I'd like to ask another question. Can you just tell us the typical treatment plan for both inflammatory breast cancer and triple negative breast cancer? I know it's going to vary with the staging and all of that, but maybe a typical treatment plan.
Okay. So we'll do the inflammatory breast cancer first. with inflammatory breast cancer, because it is so impressive at presentation, we start right off the bat with chemotherapy. There's so much changes in the skin of the breast, and those changes are really because the cancer is infiltrated the skin. So surgery is not the way to go right off, because any cut into the skin means we're cutting through cancer, and you really can't sew cancer to cancer. It wouldn't hold. The skin breaks down. That's why we don't do surgery. We start with chemo. The reason for chemo is so that we can kill off all the cells in the skin and in the breast, or as much of it as possible. And then the next step after the chemo would be surgery, because by then we've decreased the tumor load to a good enough amount that we can then cut through the skin and be able to get healthy skin close to healthy skin. And we usually would do a mastectomy even after the chemo for inflammatory breast cancer, because the tumor at presentation is so overwhelming, involves almost the entire breast and the skin. And once you stop chemo, those cancer cells can start to regrow. So it wouldn't be safe to just do a lumpectomy, for instance, after chemo. And then following surgery, we add radiation treatment. Again, because of how aggressive it was at presentation, we don't want to take any chances, so we'd add radiation. So that is the treatment for inflammatory breast cancer. With triple-negative breast cancer, the treatment actually is not too different from the similar stage non-triple-negative breast cancer. So if it's a small breast cancer, we can get away with a lumpectomy. If it's a larger breast cancer, we may suggest a mastectomy. With the triple negative, it's okay to go ahead and do the surgery first, unless it's so large that we want to shrink it with chemo prior to surgery. And then if we do surgery first, of course, chemo will follow after surgery. And then, again, depending on the stage and involvement of lymph nodes, et cetera, we may add radiation at the end of chemotherapy for triple negative.
Okay.
I have
Thanks so much, please.
I want to make sure I didn't misunderstand. Did you say that possibly to do a lumpectomy with inflammatory?
No, it's not.
Okay, good. That's how I wanted to. I got a little worried.
No. We don't recommend that at all.
As a matter of fact, it's a non-skin sparing mastectomy. Can you explain the difference in that and a regular mastectomy?
Sure. The skin sparing mastectomy tries to save as much skin as possible. And we're generally just taking the nipple, the areola around the nipple, and maybe a little bit of skin around the nipple and areola, but not much more than that. So we're making a keyhole, and through that keyhole, we're going in and scooping out the entire breast tissue. So that's the skin sparing. And non-skin sparing means that we're just taking as much skin as you can get away with, but leaving enough to close the muscle underneath so that it's not exposed.
Excellent. I think that's a very, very important clarification.
Yeah.
Eileen, would you like to ask another question?
Sure, definitely. So my next question is that African-American, Latinos, and younger women are diagnosed with triple negative at a much higher rate. Why do we think that is?
You know, as an African-American myself, I'm very, very interested in this topic, and I do a lot of talks in the African-American community regarding this. And the simple answer is that nobody knows. And there's been a lot of research that's done into this. So women, African-American women have been studied in the U.S., and minority women have been studied abroad in African countries, et cetera. And what we're noticing is that the biology of breast cancer is similar in women in this country and African-American women in other countries. So we think there's something genetic within the African-American culture that lends itself to this particular type of breast cancer being more prominent. in this racial subgroup, but nothing's been pinpointed just yet. But you're absolutely right. It is the more aggressive cancer in African-American women. It's found in younger African-American women than Caucasian women. And this is something that's being looked into, but there's definitely some genetic basis to it, as we notice the same in African countries.
And is that the case also for those of us who had genetic counseling, and not only did it not come up in the genetic counseling session, but also I know, I mean, for my case in particular, that there is no one who had any kind of cancer in my family. And so would it be several generations back, or how can we understand that more?
Yeah, and that's a hard one to understand, because we have this BRCA 1 and 2 gene, and if you have the gene, then it's genetic, but there are lots and lots of women who have breast cancer and don't have the gene and don't have a family history, and that's where the questions begin. My belief is that there are more genes out there than the BRCA 1 and 2 genes. We just have not discovered them yet.
Right.
And this is what research is all about. In the next 5 years, we may find more genes than we know now. But it makes no sense that three sisters in a family of four sisters have had breast cancer and none of them have the BRCA 1 and 2 gene. It makes no sense whatsoever. The only thing that makes sense is that there is another gene that we just have not tapped into.
Okay. Okay, well, that's great to know.
Would you like to ask the doctor another question?
Well, since we were talking about surgery earlier, and you explained very well what a non-skin-sparing mastectomy is, what are your thoughts for women who then maybe later want to have reconstruction when they've had inflammatory breast cancer? What would be your advice? Should they wait? Should they have a delay? Is there something that they should do differently?
I usually recommend that it be delayed. I don't think it's not a contraindication to have in reconstruction, but I believe it should be delayed. Only because, as you know, if you've had reconstruction, you know that reconstruction takes time. It takes a lot of time. And my concern is that while we are waiting for surgery to be scheduled and healing to take place and all of that, we're delaying time to get in the treatment that's needed, the chemotherapy or the radiation, and I wouldn't want to delay treatment. So I would rather someone went through all the treatment that they needed for that breast cancer and then concentrate on the reconstruction at a later date.
I agree with your advice. I think that's very wise. I know typically now when women have breast cancer, often they'll have same-day reconstruction with the mastectomy. And since IBC is unique and does involve skin presentation, mm-hmm. it's hard to make a woman emotionally to wait. I think it's a safer protocol, so thank you.
Yes, it is.
Great. Thanks, Terry. Eileen, would you like to jump in?
Sure. So my next question is, so I work as an integrative cancer care coach, specializing in nutrition and other lifestyle changes that we as patients can make to reduce our risk for a recurrence. And so in addition to the conventional treatment that we have, do you have any evidence-based data that can help us to deal with triple negative, and in this case, I guess, inflammatory breast cancer as well, that we can use to support ourselves naturally?
I don't have any particular natural treatments or therapies, but I mean, we know that a lot of research has been done on exercise and diet, and we know that women who exercise have a decreased risk of recurrence. We know that women who maintain a healthy weight for their height also have a decreased risk of breast cancer recurrence. Also, smoking has been looked into and found to have an impact on recurrence. As far as particular foods, what I always tell my patients is, the goal is really to keep your heart healthy because the heart feeds the rest of you. So whatever is healthy for your heart is going to be healthy for your breath. So cutting out the fat, doing more vegetables, more fruits. A lot of research is looking into dairy and carbohydrates. So all of those things definitely have an impact on breast cancer risk and risk reduction.
Thanks so much, Eileen.
Thank you. Thank you.
Terry, do you have another question?
Well, I'd like to add something on to what Eileen just said. I know with triple negative, I'm triple negative as well, and anything we can do to help us have a better chance of living to raise our children is always very much on our mind. You have three children, Eileen. I have five.
Wow.
I know in San Antonio recently at the breast cancer conference that they have every year, San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium, a significant number of posters were had very strong science showing how keeping our weight down can help us with recurrence. And I know it very much motivated me. I gained 60 pounds in treatment. I'm not normally overweight. And I found that very difficult to get rid of. I didn't have the stamina or the desire to try to get rid of what I gained in treatment. But I tell you, after seeing those posters in San Antonio, I am motivated.
Yeah.
And and so I started small. I got little pedometers you put on your belt, and I'm trying to get my 10,000 steps a day, which I'm doing good to get 3,000, honestly. I'm going to keep at it.
That's great. That's fantastic. That's fantastic. It's very, very important to me. You cannot undermine the importance of exercise and healthy eating.
Well, Dr. Oriari, we have some questions from our listeners. The first one is, if and when the first line of treatment for triple-negative metastatic breast cancer stops working, what comes next?
Ooh. If the treatment for metastatic triple-negative breast cancer stops working, what comes next?
Right, if that first line of treatment stops working.
Well, the medical oncologist, I think they have a few bags and a few tricks in their bag. And I'm not a medical oncologist, so I cannot tell you what particular drugs that they might recommend. I know that the medical oncologist that I work with also tapped into some of the research or experimental drugs. So if some of the traditional drugs stop working, they can get someone into one of the experimental or research drugs, and some women do quite well with those. But I don't know the names of the drugs to tell you, just because I'm not a medical oncologist, but I do know that they have other avenues. If one stops walking, they try the next and so forth.
Well, and I do know that my chemical oncologist tells people, especially the metastatic patients, that she has a whole line of arsenal that she can use.
Mm-hmm.
And if she reaches the end of that, there's almost always something experimental that a lot of different women will qualify. I think that's good advice. Before I ask another question from our listeners, Eileen or Terry, do you have any other questions you would like to ask the doctor?
Well,
Eileen,
I think I'm done. For now, I think that was it for me.
Okay. Terry?
Well, I'd like to talk more about the gene things later, but since she is a surgeon, I think that would be the most appropriate place to talk. And I sometimes worry when I hear about women going in for what they think is a biopsy, and they find out they come with a small lumpectomy. That makes me a little nervous as an IBC, or because IBC can be web and diffuse like cotton candy, not a lump. And as she mentioned earlier, you don't want to cut into active cancer. So since she's a surgeon, can she help us make sure the patients, that we ask the right questions? What should we ask so we come away with a clear understanding of what we're going to get? So we don't wake up thinking we're going to have a biopsy and find out we've had a rather aggressive lumpectomy. How can we be speaking the same language?
So are you talking about someone who's already diagnosed with breast cancer going in for a for lung press. I don't.
Someone going in for diagnosis, early diagnosis time. You know, they think they're getting
gotcha.
They think they're getting a biopsy. I've had this,
gotcha.
I've had my phone ring many times. A woman who
mm-hmm.
said, "Oh mm-hmm. my gosh, half my breast is gone. I thought I was getting a biopsy." And
so
how can we be sure we're clear on what we're getting? How can we
okay.
ask our doctor the right things?
Okay, so what the move over the past maybe 7-8 years in breast surgery has been towards not taking any person to the operating room without a diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
So you really should not be having surgery for diagnostic reasons unless you could not do a needle biopsy. The first line should always be a needle biopsy, unless the person refused to have a needle biopsy for whatever reason, or we couldn't target the area with a needle. But the needle biopsy should always be the first thing. So I would encourage the people that you know that you've talked to always ask their doctor, can we do a needle biopsy before surgery? So once the needle biopsy is done, that gives you the diagnosis. Is it breast cancer? Is it not breast cancer? Which, if it's breast cancer, then you know you're going in for a lumpectomy. And if it's not a breast cancer, say it's something that's high risk, and they still call it a lumpectomy because you're taking out something that's high risk, but it's not necessarily a biopsy. Does that make sense? Did I make that?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that makes sense.
So,
and also, I guess then if you had a situation where you were having a difficult diagnosis, maybe due to the needle biopsy wasn't conclusive or there was just
mm-hmm.
some discomfort for whatever
mm-hmm.
reason, could an MRI be done prior to the lumpectomy to help give the surgeon more knowledge to go forward?
Sometimes it can't be, and as you know, sometimes our hands are tied by the insurance companies, what we can and cannot do. And MRIs are very expensive, and, you know, I've been in those type situations where the mammogram don't tell me much, the ultrasound does not tell me much, and I want to get an MRI, and the insurance companies refuse. So we can certainly ask for it, but it's a good chance sometimes that they may refuse it, depending on the particular insurance company.
Okay.
So
that's
a limitation, unfortunately.
I think that would also apply a lot, too, with women under 40, don't you think? As a doctor, when we have with triple negative and IBC, both tend to hit younger women, like Eileen was diagnosed, at 34, Eileen?
Yeah, that's correct.
And so I think a lot of times when a woman's younger, they may have to have their doctor fight a little harder for those tests. Is
right.
that your case?
Right, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we fight hard for everyone and give all the documenting information that they require, but, again, unfortunately, there's so much sometimes that we can do. But I think the main thing really is, if we're unable to do a needle biopsy and a surgical biopsy is what's required, then I guess the discussion should be had between the patient and the doctor as far as how much they plan to take out.
Excellent.
If it's just a small area, then, you know, it's a small area, but if it's a huge area, then make sure you talk to them about, are they taking just a little bit to test it or are they taking the whole thing? In which case, we get into lumpectomy territory.
Thank you, Terry.
I have another question from one of our listeners. Compared to other forms of breast cancer, inflammatory breast cancer tends to have a poor survival rate. Why is that?
It's just because it's such a rapidly advancing breast cancer that by the time that it's diagnosed, it's usually so advanced. And that's really simply the only reason, is just because it's so advanced at presentation. If it was something that we found sooner, then it may be just as curable as the other breast cancers. But it's almost like ovarian cancer in that in that way that is just diagnosed at a late stage.
So it sounds like education for people in general and talk shows just like this are really important to keeping all of us in good health, because if it were diagnosed at an earlier stage through education and just being aware, then it wouldn't have such a poor survival rate. Is that accurate?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Education and awareness is the key to all of this.
Well, if I can say something on that, Beverly, did you know that inflammatory cannot be diagnosed prior to a stage 3? There is no test. So one of the things that's difficult, this show is hugely important, and you're very right for women to know, because I know for myself, if I had a rash or a little pimple on my breast, or my breast was one was a little bit different than the other, I might think, oh, I've just stopped nursing a baby, or I'm aging, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But at very first blush of inflammatory, that woman is already at stage 3. So time is not on her side. And so a program like yours can be very life-saving, because a woman might have a symptom and go, oh, I've scratched myself in the yard or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And what
she
heard here with the doctor might be the clue in that she needs to not wait a few days and to get to the doctor and see what they can do. But you can't know you have it till you're stage 3.
Right, you can't. You really can't.
That's interesting. That's interesting for all of us to hear.
Right, because, you know, part of the staging for breast cancer has to do with skin involvement, and once the skin is involved, you're right, it is the stage 3 breast cancer.
That makes sense. Terry, do you have another question for us before I go on to one of the listeners' questions?
No, I'd love to hear what the listeners have to say. They're always so smart. It's fun.
All right. One of the other questions is, what does current research say about any particular or new treatments for future inflammatory breast cancer therapies?
I have not heard anything new just yet, unfortunately. And, you know, the treatment for inflammatory breast cancer has not changed since I graduated from medical school many years ago. It's still chemo, surgery, radiation, and that has not changed at all.
Okay.
I think part of it, again, is because of how aggressive it is and how late it is, that presentation.
Okay. It's unfortunate. Hopefully some of that research will give us something new.
Absolutely.
I tell people all the time, just hang in there, because there could be some new research that pops up tomorrow. We just never know when we're going to have a breakthrough.
That's true. We never know. We never know.
I have another question that I don't know that you'll be able to answer since you are a surgical oncologist, but I'm going to go ahead and ask it. What are some of the adjunctive chemotherapy options for treating early-stage triple-negative breast cancer?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to be able to answer that. You're right. Other than the traditional chemotherapies, the Taxols and Taxotere and those types of treatments, I don't know any specific other ones that are targeted for the triple-negative breast cancers.
Okay. All right. That's a good answer. I think that's a good enough answer for us. There's a couple of different options. That's my last question from our listeners. Terry, do you want to ask any other questions specific to inflammatory breast cancer triple negative?
Well, I'd like to have the doctor address the fact that used to be they thought that about 25% of the women diagnosed with inflammatory were triple negative. But I know that MD Anderson is now quoting maybe as much as 40%. They are studying this more, and they see a closer relationship. Do you feel that is true in what you see in your practice as a surgeon, that you see more IBCers and triple negatives combined? Or do you still see them apart? I know you see them apart, but you know what I mean?
I actually still see them apart. You know, a good number of them are triple negative, but I still see a good number that are not. Yeah, so I'll be definitely interested to see that research. And, you know, the whole triple negative thing is still evolving. And there's just so much information still that we're gathering. So, like someone mentioned earlier, we now know that women that are triple negative are more likely to have BRCA 1 and 2 positive genes. And these women were not tested about 10 years ago. So now we're going back and we're retesting the women that were diagnosed 10 years or more for the BRCA gene because they may be carriers and we just didn't know it back then. So there's just a lot of new information coming out and a lot of changes being made, and it's actually quite an interesting time in breast cancer surgery and breast cancer practice as a whole.
I know a question I'd love to ask you as a surgeon is lymphedema. We have not addressed lymphedema. And when you removal of all the nodes, lymphedema can become quite an issue for a woman with an aggressive cancer where she had a non-skin-sparing mastectomy or a lot of nodal removal. Would you like to address lymphedema issues post-surgery to some of your patients?
Sure. I hate to address it because I hate seeing lymphedema, unfortunately. Nobody likes
it. I understand.
Yeah. But, you know, lymphedema is one of those things that no surgeon wants to have their patients ever experience it, and no patient ever wants to have it. But it is more common the more lymph nodes you remove, especially if you add radiation to the mix of it, then the risk is probably about 30 to 35%. There are measures to decrease the chances, and it starts at surgery. It starts with how we perfect out those lymph nodes. And then what we've been doing recently in the practice, which seems to have been helping, is when we anticipate someone is going to need to have a lot of lymph nodes removed, we start physical therapy even before the surgery, and they continue soon after surgery. And that seems to work really well in decreasing the risk of lymphedema. But if someone does have lymphedema, again, it's not something that happens to everyone. It's not something that necessarily will happen right after surgery. It could be 5-10 years down the road before it does develop. And there are measures today, simple measures from wearing a sleeve to massaging the arms to the pumps. Yeah, I think, Beverly, you have one of those pumps.
Yes, mm-hmm. I do.
Yeah, and there are some new surgeries that are being done in some parts of the country where they're taking lymph nodes from other places and revascularizing the lymphatic system under the arm, and it works sometimes and sometimes it doesn't, but there's just newer things that are being tried that may be the way of the future.
Well, I know my surgeon was frustrated because she felt bad that I have lymphedema in one of my arms, but said to her, not to be worried, you saved my life. Lymphedema is something difficult and uncomfortable to live with,
it is.
But it's something I can manage, and I did not want her to feel burdened by what she needed to do, save my life, but maybe later I had a risk of lymphedema. And I would pick the lymphedema over cancer any day. I don't know about you, Beverly, but I would.
Absolutely. And you know, what I haven't mentioned on the show yet is actually that Dr. Oriari is actually my surgeon. So,
oh, excellent.
Yes. So, you know, how do you say thank you to someone who saved your life other than just saying thank you? But absolutely, that risk of lymphedema was definitely well worth it for me to have that surgery. Dr. Oriari, I'd like to ask you a question that maybe will help some of our listeners out there who have not developed breast cancer. What can people do if they're at high risk? Maybe they have a family history, or they, you know, maybe they have that BRCA 1 or 2 gene. What can they do to be on top of breast cancer to make sure that they can identify quickly if it would develop at some point?
All right, so part of what we do for high risk is there's three things. The simplest is surveillance. I see these women in the office every 6 months. We're either doing mammograms, ultrasounds, or breast MRIs. That's part of the screening. That's important. And we're doing the breast exams every 6 months. The second thing is to talk to a medical oncologist about chemo prevention. So we talk about tamoxifen or Avastin for prevention. And, you know, those drugs are not only for women who have had breast cancer. We do give those to women who don't have breast cancer. And a lot of the studies have shown that it could be preventative and decreases the risk of developing breast cancer. And then the third is to consider prophylactic mastectomies, which some women are good candidates for when they're high risk and some are not. But those are usually three mainstays, which is observation with the screening exams and the imaging, the medicines, or the surgery.
And can we expand on that prophylactic bilateral mastectomy just a bit? Who is a good
sure.
candidate for that if they have not been diagnosed with breast cancer?
Okay, so the best candidates are women who are BRCA positive, because having the BRCA gene gives you over 80% risk of developing a breast cancer, and then contralateral or the other side breast cancer about 40+%. So that's a huge risk. So those women we absolutely recommend should have prophylactic mastectomies. And then women who have an entity called lobular carcinoma in situ are also candidates for prophylactic mastectomy. Lobular carcinoma in situ is a bad name because it has cancer in the name, but it's not a breast cancer. It's a high-risk lesion that we see when we do a biopsy, either a needle biopsy or a surgical biopsy. We find this on pathology. This LCIS for short is called increases one's risk of developing a breast cancer as much as 1% every year, so it's cumulative, and not only in one breast, but in both breasts. So it's one of those things that when we find, we make those recommendations, we either screen you closely or we give you the drug, or both, or you proceed with a mastectomy. The third reason somebody might be recommended prophylactic surgery is if we calculate their lifetime risk. Say someone comes into the office and they have multiple family members that have had breast cancer, or the family members that have had the BRCA gene, and we calculate their risk, we do what's called the GIL risk calculation, and they have a lifetime breast cancer risk of over 20%. Those are pretty high-risk women, so that's part of the recommendation or part of the options that's presented to them, is that they could have prophylactic surgery. So I think those are the main groups of women that are good candidates for the prophylactic surgery. Yeah. And, of course, women who have breast cancer on one side could have prophylactic surgery on the opposite breast.
That makes sense. I think that's good for listeners to hear, because hearing that people have breast cancer and then some of the celebrities who have had the prophylactic bilateral mastectomies really gets everybody up in arms, and it's important for people to hear that. We are almost
right, that,
out of time. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I guess the celebrity you're mentioning is Angelina Jolie, and the reason she had her surgery is because she is BRCA positive. So she's a perfect candidate to undergo that surgery.
That's important. And I think a lot of people might not understand that. So
mm-hmm.
that's important for them to hear. Eileen, do you have any last comments for us before we wrap this up today?
Well, I'm always interested in what the doctors themselves do to help keep breast cancer away. And so if you can just quickly tell us maybe what you do as part of your healthy regimen so that you keep breast cancer out of your life on a personal level.
Okay. Well, I will tell you what I do, but before I say that, what I want to say is that I don't know that breast cancer is preventable. I really don't believe that it is preventable. I think that we can decrease the risk of it.
Yeah, and I agree with you on that.
Right, and we can find it sooner rather than later. But I don't think it's completely preventable. But part of my regimen is I really try to be healthy. I make it a point to be healthy. I have children. I work full-time. It's hard. It's really hard for women out there with all we have to do. But I exercise regularly. I'm a runner, so I try to keep up with the running. And I eat extremely healthy, lots of fruits, lots of vegetables. And I shouldn't be eating carbs or red meat, but I do. I try to do it to a minimum. So those are my regimen. That's what I do right now. And hopefully I can keep up with that for a long time to come. And I examine myself every month. That's important. I do my mammograms yearly. And I do have a gynecologist that I see every year and make sure that someone else other than myself and my husband are examining my breast.
Thanks, Dr. Oyari. That was a great question, Eileen. Terry, any last comments or questions from you?
I think my main parting message I would want it to be is to hope always. Don't give up hope if you get a heavy diagnosis. When I was diagnosed in 2007 with triple-negative IBC, both my breasts impacted, I really didn't have any reason to look at statistics and think that I would be talking to you here almost 7 years later. But I am, and I'm well. I will never view myself as cancer-free. I have to be watched very carefully, but I'm living without cancer. And I want people to have hope and to not be afraid if this comes their way.
An excellent message, Terry. Yeah. Thanks so much. And that's also a message I always share, is there's always hope. Dr. Oyari, any last comments?
Yes, I just want to echo what you both just said. There is always hope. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I've seen women survive the unsurvivable. And breast cancer is definitely treatable today. There's no reason why it should not be treatable. We've got lots of good options, lots of good drugs, and more research underway on a daily basis. So there is definitely always hope. If there's no drugs for whatever type of breast cancer you have today, there may be in the next few months, in the next year. So definitely always keep up hope. Don't give up.
That is a great message. Thank you so much, Eileen. Thank you, Terry. And thank you, Dr. Oyari. I know that you were just finishing surgery before you rushed in to join us for the phone call. So I just want to say a special thanks to everybody and to all of our listeners.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beverly. That was great. Dr. Oyari, thank you so very much for being with us today. Beverly, I think you guys are wonderful. I learned so much, and I hope our audience too learned a lot from today's discussion. I thank all of them for having dialed in to listen. Thank you so much. Please join us again on January 17th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for a discussion on nutrition and supplements during cancer treatment. Anil said, breast cancer is treatable. Keep up hope. So that last note, we wrap up today's session. Thank you so very much. Everybody keep warm and see you again. Thank you.